Colonel Jackson, Reel Number 2. Colonel, after you left the Royal Military College of Science, you went to the 2nd Battalion, I believe, in 1932.
That's it.
Where was that stationed?
2nd Battalion was at Farnborough. The other battalions were... The 3rd were at Lydd, and the 4th were in Kettering, and the 5th were at Perham Down at Tidworth. 2nd Battalion was a very good sporting battalion, very good at all games. And they were particularly interested in swimming and boxing. And they were rather interested in getting me there, because at that time I held the 100 yards army record for swimming. And so it wasn't much problem in going to the 2nd.
Was this a normal method of selection in those days?
I think the scouts had their eyes open. The 3rd were very specialised in athletics, and they watched for any prospective people in the young officers to get there. And the 4th really specialised in soccer, and the 5th in rugger. And the 2nd, of course, were good at everything.
Yes. There was a great deal of emphasis, obviously, Colonel, in these days, on sport. Would this be in some ways to gain prowess against the older arms, perhaps, and to prove your worth off the field as well as on?
No, I don't think it was that. I think it was that it was the best way of getting the right spirit in a regiment, and once you got them interested, if they were playing games, they weren't getting into mischief elsewhere. And once they were playing games, the best thing was to teach them to play the games to their best ability, and to get on top, which did happen in the 2nd. We had some splendid people who were instructors and in the various games, who could be responsible for the teams and train them up to the very peak.
So it was a question of esprit de corps, literally.
It was. Yes, it was.
Colonel, just for the record, you now still hold, I believe, a record for swimming for the Army.
Yes, the Army plunging. I took up plunging as I got a little older, and couldn't get quite so much speed out of the ordinary swimming, some 20 years later or so, 1950-something, it was taken out of the competitive inter-services competition, and therefore the Army took it out of their own championships, and I happened to be the holder at the time.
So unless they bring it back, you'll hold that
in perpetuity.
Colonel, looking at these times in 1932, there must have been a great deal of insecurity, nonetheless, in this new corps. There was some doubts, wasn't there, about its future?
Yes, at that time there was a sort of talk that as we operated guns, our rightful place would be in the Royal Artillery. But it was there was talk about it, and it must have emanated from a higher source than the ordinary battalion company talk. But we never really took it very seriously. We knew perfectly well that tanks were essential and were different from artillery. Their method of shooting was quite different, especially shooting on the move, more like shotgun shooting. We were never really worried.
You had a great hope for the future then, you thought?
Oh yes, we knew perfectly well that the future did lay in mechanized warfare, in the use of tanks.
And yet there were those, of course, in the army of senior rank who didn't see it quite this way.
Yes, there were, and of course that was the object of General Broad's modern formations paper, to try both to lay down doctrine for the tanks to train on and to try and educate the higher authority.
And of course there was also the purple primer, wasn't there, Richard?
This modern formations, I think you would term the purple primer. I don't think there was any other book that. Yes, I think you would term.
This was the popular name for it, wasn't it? Because it wasn't in a purple cover.
It had a purple cover. Yeah.
What about the question of promotion? Because that must have been a fairly hot question in those days.
Yes, promotion was very slow, and we had subalterns with 15 years or more service, which did make, when you've done orderly officer for that length of time, it does rather take the energy out of you. You're rather apt to become rather lethargic and not to have any vision and just to carry on your duties as best you can and hope that one day that you'll be a captain.
Were not some of your officer friends disgruntled over this situation?
I don't think they were disgruntled. They were perhaps a little upset when they saw promotion in perhaps the cavalry being at a very much shorter period. But I think they accepted it. It was inevitable in a big corps like ours, with very few people. The turnover was not so big. People didn't retire early as much as they did in the wealthier arms.
Did it get better later on, the question of promotion?
It really didn't get better until the reorganization of the army in 1938 under Horbelicia, when a captain, you became a captain after 8 years' service, and that I think did make people much happier.
This undoubtedly under the influence of Little Hart.
Very much under his influence. He and Horbelicia were great friends, and Horbelicia did listen to what Little Hart had to say.
You were a dedicated bunch of men these days. Did you take much interest in doctrine?
Yes, very much. We used to discuss what was happening, but I don't think we were ever could be ever accused of overdoing it. We used to discuss these things amongst ourselves, and it wasn't the sole topic of conversation. And as long as you got the hang of it, and as long as you knew what your particular job was, you carried on and saw how it worked out.
So your interests were mainly tactical as opposed to strategical, would you say?
Oh, very much so, yes. The strategy of it didn't really enter into it. It was at that age. It did, of course, for the people who were working out the use of a tank formation. That, of course, was very much their job, and we merely helped by doing what we had to do.
Still, you had insecurity, you had fairly bad promotion prospects. Did you have any transfers to other arms?
There were very few. The only temporary transfers would have been to the RAF. That was quite popular. Quite a number of people applied to transfer to the RAF for 3 or 4 years and learned to fly, and then the idea was they came back again. But of course, when the war intervened, a lot of them didn't come back. They stayed in the RAF, and it was a loss to the Royal Tank Corps, and as far as I can remember, Brigadier Hubbard, when he was inspector, did dampen down the numbers who were applying for the RAF. I didn't permit quite a lot of them to go.
In those days, did you see an affinity between the tank and the aircraft?
No, I don't think there was enough. I see what you mean. There was an affinity in that they were the people who could supply a tank force which was out in the blue very much more easily than by road or other means. And also they could see ahead for you. And the Army Cooperation Squadrons did try to cooperate, but they were so few of them and they were so thin on the ground, we very rarely saw any. And we certainly didn't have any fighters or light bombers to take part in our exercises.
I suppose there's an affinity too in the fact that they were both mechanical arms, were they not? New mechanical arms.
Yes, I don't think that really came into it. We were always interested in it, and used to get RAF officers coming to have a look at us, and they always swore after we took them out for a ride in the tanks that they were glad to get back to their own particular method of transport.
When you say they were transferred to the Air Force, do you mean to the Army Corporation Squadrons?
It would have been to the Army Corporation, yes.
So not to the Air Force as such?
No, they still retained, they were seconded.
Did you have any of your colleagues who worked in Iraq, in that sense, with the Air Force? In the interwar years, in Iraq?
No, not that I can remember. No.
Colonel, what position did you hold when you went to the 2nd Battalion RTC?
I was a subsection commander of a medium section in C Company.
And how many tanks would be in a section?
There were five in a section, and that was a section commander and two subsections of two. And they were all Mark I mediums.
So you had quite a lot of experience with the Mark I.
Quite a bit, yes, with the Mark I, which was a delightful vehicle.
What about the light tanks? Did you have experience with those as well?
Yes, because in, I think it was 1933, the light battalion for the Army Tank Brigade was recruited from each battalion, and certain numbers from each battalion went for the manoeuvres period to form the light battalion, and I was one of those.
What vehicle would be in the light battalion?
Well, when it started, we had very few light tanks. and they were the carbon Lloyd carrier was used in lieu of a light tank.
How did you find the Vickers One? You said it was a delightful tank. In what sense was it delightful in those days?
Well, it was a very reliable machine. It gave you a good ride. And it was a comfortable, interesting machine, especially firing a 3-pounder on battle practice.
And fairly easy to handle.
Very easy to handle.
Did you have any difficulties such as the tracks coming off from time to time?
The tracks did give a bit of trouble, and the bogey wheels. Of course, each year we used to drive down to Lulwell to fire our battle practice by road. That gave the tanks a pretty good testing. On the whole, the casualties were very small. They were mostly to do with bogey wheels cracking up or brake drums for the epicyclic steering clutch. They occasionally gave a bit of trouble, wanted relining. But on the whole, they were very good, and provided you kept at it with the Oddy grease pump and watched things, the engine was excellent. It was an air-cooled Armstrong Siddeley with a Keith Blackman fan for cooling. And except for starting, you occasionally had difficulty with over-flooding and difficulty in starting and a backfire, which resulted in a small fire, which always had your pyrene handy to put it out. There was very little trouble. Magnetos, BTH magnetos, were of a standard pattern. They did occasionally give trouble, but they were very easy to replace. Synchronizing the Claudel Hobson carburetors was quite a job, but once it was done, you didn't have much problem with it.
These are all fairly minor points then, you're saying?
Very minor. Hmm.
What about the Carden Lloyd?
Carden Lloyd had a Ford, T model Ford engine with epicyclic gearbox and steering by brake and differential. It was a very crude machine. It used to run terribly hot. But on the whole, it would get from A to B without much trouble, and fairly fast. Very uncomfortable.
What about the suspension? Was that a bit suspect?
Suspension of the Carden Lloyd, you used to get track troubles there with track braking. They were very quickly mended. You carried a lot of spare track pins and made a little bit of hard work, but you were rather relieved to stop, really, because they really were the most uncomfortable vehicles you could imagine.
Colonel, you were on manoeuvres, the very critical manoeuvres of 32, 33 and 34. What tactical changes occurred, can you recall, in those years?
It was on the sort of tank brigade line. It was really concentrating on working together as a tank force rather than cooperating with infantry or another arm, and making wide sweeps around the flanks of imaginary enemies and drill and manoeuvre and fire and movement were the sort of predominant features of those particular manoeuvres.
In 34 you had Lindsay's mobile force, didn't you?
34 was the tank brigade exercises, which culminated in the mobile force exercise, which was rather, in a way, unfortunate. It was set by the GOC Southern Command, General Burnett Stewart, possibly set rather, making things rather difficult for the mobile force to operate. We enjoyed it in the light battalion. We did a tremendous swan, did about 150 miles as far as I can remember, but on the whole it wasn't a success for the tank brigade. They never got a chance to show their paces.
Well, being a sportsman and in favour of fair play, were you a little bit hurt by this attitude, perhaps, of Burnett Stewart, that he would use this exercise possibly to denigrate the mobile force?
I think we were a little bit upset that it hadn't worked out as obviously our brigade commander would have liked, but I don't think it made all that difference. We took it in our stride, and it may have influenced, or it may have supported the theories that some people had, which was that the army should remain as a conventional force as it had been for so long, because the conventional force rather seemed to win the day. But it didn't unduly worry us at my level.
In the army at this time, Colonel, there was some divergence of opinion, I believe, over the actual role of the tank in the tank corps itself. Can you say something on this?
Yes. Well, I don't think there was a divergence of opinion. I think there were two schools of thought. One was that the tank's job was to support infantry and place them on their objective in cooperation with other arms. And the other school of thought was that the tank force should operate independently of other arms and be used as a raiding force or as a striking force on its own with the support of the Army Cooperation Squadrons and the Royal Air Force.
Taking your colleagues as you knew them, where was the allegiance lying of those two?
I don't think the operation of a troop was pretty well the same, fire and movement. And if we were told that we'd got to do infantry cooperation for a particular exercise, it didn't unduly worry us. In the light battalion, and I was with the light battalion 33 to 35. Of course, that didn't really come in because we never did any cooperation with infantry.
Taking this independent role of the tank, what were the difficulties over supply?
Yes, the difficulties over supply were the vulnerability of the B echelon. And if the tank force had gone deep into enemy country, the B echelon was in danger, and of course this meant that as far as possible in some of the exercises the tank should be fairly well self-contained.
How was this attempted? to keep it self-contained? Were there attempts made to do so?
Yes, there were, by, at that time, purely on the food side, by carrying supplies in the tank of packed food, and the ability to cook it with a primus stove. The tank cooker didn't come out until a little later, I think. But petrol and oil and spares were a problem. You could carry a certain number of track plates and bogey wheels and things, but not a great number.
Were not some attempts made to fit a trailer to tanks?
Not at that time.
No.
It was later on we had the rotor trailer, just prior to the war.
Did you have any dealings with this trailer?
Yes, I did. Yes, I'll tell you about it.